Sup, freaks. This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an AirGAT fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q. This rip was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. If you have friends, family members who are newbies, they still have their Bitcoin in the exchange, help them take the first step off the exchange. BitKey makes it very easy. It's a hardware device that has a multi-sig. You have the hardware device has a key. Your mobile phone app has a key. And Block has a key in the cloud. They've designed this with trade-offs to make it very hard to lose Bitcoin. Easy to use, hard to lose. Go to bitkey.world. Use the code RHR or RHR20 at checkout to get a discount. Not sure exactly which one it is yet. Try both. Go check it out. bitkey.world. Try RHR or RHR20. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC free for completing the bounties. If you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats, go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Boom. We're on the air. What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Rabbit Hole Recap. Matt, I was just about to say it, but I figured I'd let the freaks in on this. Bought a car last week. Literally, less than 7 days ago. It'll be exactly 7 days in 5 hours from when I bought this car. I have to go back to the dealership where we bought it from after I record this with you, after we record Rabbit Hole Recap this week. They sold me a lemon, dude. The air conditioner doesn't work. It's 95 degrees here.
Was it used or new?
It was new.
I was like, I'm gonna get a new car. What'd you buy?
We got a Tahoe.
By lease or buy?
Buy. It's cheaper to buy.
Well, it depends. I mean, it's definitely lease is more expensive all in. But it depends how bullish you are on Bitcoin. Because you can push it out more. But you got a Tahoe and it has no air conditioning. That's pretty bad.
I had to drive home. I had to fly across the country earlier this week. And I didn't realize it because we bought the car and then I drove straight down the shore, windows down, vibing. And then I parked it for the weekend. I got in the car Monday. This is like literally 100 degrees down the shore and I'm driving. I'm like, I have the air conditioner. I was just like blowing hot air on me. I was like, maybe the engine's got to warm up so it can cool down the air. And no, it was like a hot box. I got home to my place in Philly, pulled in the driveway, opened the door to 100 degree weather, and it was relieving. I have to go to the car dealership after this. It's a great way to
end the week. What did they say? And they're going to probably try and fix it, not give you a different car.
I hope it's an easy fix.
Could it just be like AC fluid or whatever.
I don't know what it is.
I mean, not to shit on your current purchase, but I'm a Toyota only guy now. I think I'm just going to only buy Toyotas for the rest of my life.
I was trying to buy American.
Well, Japanese is... Japanese is kind of American since World War II.
Oh, oh, hot take.
Proxy state.
Yeah, so I got to do that.
I saw on Primal that you also like buried the lead on your car announcement message.
You
had another big announcement in the post. You just kind of like buried it in there.
Oh, we've been talking about it on the show.
Have we?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Or you got another baby coming. That's why we need to get the Tahoe.
I thought that was the first public announcement of it.
No.
You're like, credit scores are such a scam. Like, went to the dealership, blah, 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 because the third child's coming, blah, blah, blah. And like, all the comments underneath were just like, congratulations.
Yeah. Third baby coming. 1 of 2, zone defense coming up.
Love it. How many people do you think complain about the declining birth rate online and then don't have kids?
Too many.
What percentage do you think that is? Like 30%?
Probably higher. Probably higher. Well, I think we need to. How many people that don't have a number of kids above replacement rate are complaining about it? I would say it's like 40-60%. I'm officially joining the above replacement rate club.
The replacement weight is 2.1, right? You need to have 3.
Yeah.
I feel like you're allowed to complain if you have 1 and you're on your way, if you intend to have more.
Yes, if you intend to. Okay, I like that. That's the clarification we're going to settle on there.
Like me and my lady, you know, God willing, will get past the replacement rate. That is our goal, to shatter the replacement rate. But also, I don't really complain about it. Like, you should just do it.
I don't really complain about it. I more highlight it. Like, this is probably not good for humanity.
I'm seeing, Marty, just so you're prepared when you go there, I'm seeing Lance Hoddle saying there's no such thing as AC fluid. What, did it used to be a thing? I thought there was like...
there's engine coolant.
Why? Clearly, one of my skill sets that I have to improve is on the mechanical side. I don't pretend to have many skills there. I can change a tire and I can jump a car.
I can do both of those things too.
And I'm quite handy with duct tape.
I'm trying to get better. I did some electrical engineering.
Freon. Is Freon awesome. Not a thing?
Freon, isn't that for fridges?
Yeah, but I thought it was also for ACs. Yeah. I think it's for home ACs.
I went to get the haircut today, if you couldn't tell. The barber was saying, I hope it's not your compressor. Maybe a compressor issue, the barber was thinking.
But 7 days, it's got to be under warranty.
I think we have like a 7-year warranty. So that's what we signed up.
Well, you can update us next week.
Or no, it's like 5-year, 70,000-mile warranty. What we have.
There's blinker fluid, Matt. Okay, well, I don't know what you guys are talking about. Did Freon? I thought Freon was a thing.
I thought that it was for refrigerators. We're a car podcast now. You can tell we know.
The world's exactly worst
talking about.
Oh, it's a gas. It's a gas, not a fluid. Got it.
Man.
Great. Well, it exists at least.
It does. It does.
When it leaks, does it come out as a fluid? Does it change? What is the physics term when gas changes states? I don't know. I'm not trying to save myself.
Sublimation is when you go from like a solid to a gas. Freezing, obviously.
When it's leaking, does it leak as a liquid?
Freon? I have no idea. No, you're asking the wrong guy.
I'm not asking you. I'm asking Lance Hoddle and fucking Soap Miner in the comments. I'm clearly not asking you. It's gas. Don't inhale it. It'll kill you. Great. Very informative. I was not going to do that. We got zaps already. We have unknown zap 21,000 sats saying, let's fucking go, boys. We have soap miner zapping 21,000 sats. Hell yeah. Congratulations, Marty. I think he's congratulating you on the kid upcoming, not the broken vehicle.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, soap miner. Thank you for your soap, too. While we're talking about this, we're zapping. You don't have it on the list, but I think we should talk about it because it just highlights the abject insanity of the broader crypto world. We were talking a little bit about it last week. Zora, so hot right now. Base, so hot right now. If you freaks are listening in via Fountain or any other podcasting 2.0 after record, if you're listening live on zap.stream, Logan, pull it up. Could you imagine if this was the process by which you had to support our content? You had to zap. Mippo, Mike Ippolito, I believe he's from Blockworks, tweeted out yesterday, be me. Send USDC from Coinbase to Coinbase wallet. Try to swap for Zora, but need to move to Base. How does this not work natively? Bridge, run out of gas. Buy more ETH. Go to Uniswap. See slippage default set to 5.5%. 1.5 hours in. Guys, this UX still sucks.
Well, so I was reading the comments. Because it's centralized trash, you can't send USDC on Base in New York. So I guess from Coinbase. So I guess it's a little, if you're a Coinbase user, it's probably, I don't know why I'm giving them any kind of credit, but I guess it's a little bit easier if you're already a Coinbase user and you don't live in New York.
Coinbase doesn't have a Bit license yet?
They do have a Bit license. They're like, they love the Bit license. It's part of their regulatory note that keeps everyone else out. Strike should hopefully have a Bit license within the next month or so. But it's expensive and time consuming. But I think there's like, Cash App has a Bit license, but they don't sell the BitKey in New York or offer Lightning in New York, right? There's like different.
I don't even think they have a Bit license. I think there was like a workaround.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I don't pretend to understand those things. Not a lawyer.
Yeah.
It's not my specialty.
Even if you're on Coinbase, like the whole like bridging to Zora.
It's ridiculous. They make everything way more complicated and still incredibly centralized just to run Seek additionally. I thought you showed a perfect example of just like you have the open protocol that is Bitcoin, you have the open protocol that's Noster, and it's seamless and frictionless. Yeah. The open protocol that is Cashew. It's frictionless, seamless to use. But the problem with that is the VCs can't run Seek off of it. There's not like a million different places for them to run Seek off of you. And there's no real moats. Like that, I don't think people truly appreciate, like if you're building on top of Noster, you have such a small moat. The moat is so non-existent that literally a user can leave your app by copying, pasting a string. Like it's literally as easy as you fuck with your users. All they have to do is press Control C, Control V, and they're out. That is something that traditional VCs just can't wrap their head around. They're used to locking people up in the walled gardens.
Yeah.
Before you
pull up this article from Matt Logan, pull up this tweet. These people are making a lot of money. What's the value of Zora? I've made over $1,000 posting today. The value of my creator coin is up $10,000. That is more than I've ever made on Twitter. Sometimes you don't need to overthink it. Let's make some Zora predictions right now.
Wait, so what is Zora? Zora is built on top of Base. It's an app on the Base.
I think it's like a Farcaster fork for the Base protocol.
It's on top of Base though. Like Base is supposed to be, you have the Base app and then like there's apps on top of Base, right?
I think so. Like how much of this activity, I mean, we've seen it on Noster too, like the early days of Noster, you know, like Zapathons and all that.
Yeah, but we didn't have creator coins.
No,
this is like this is more like BitCloud.
The point being is like how much of this do you think is like manufactured hype?
Well, I will say that Coinbase themselves came out and said that they're zapping $10,000 a day worth of USDC to users. They're sending them like $3 worth of USDC every day. Like we don't have, Nostr obviously doesn't have that kind of, we don't have the money sloshing around. We don't have the money. So, I mean, open up the next the link I put at the end that I just added. So this is apparent. I just discovered this. I didn't know this existed. Decentralized messaging protocol XMTP. They just raised their Series B at a $750 million valuation, which is a staggering valuation. And they, in total, they've raised $49 million from like all the traditional VC heavyweights. You know, it was led by A16Z, Union Square Ventures is in there. And so this is one of the pieces that Base is then built on top of as well. So it's just like VC rent seeking all the way fucking down. And they realize the problem exists. Like Balaji was on A16Z's podcast the other day and he was like, we need permissionless, verifiable comms and identity. But their solutions all involve them sitting in the middle of everything. That's why they don't find Nostr interesting, because they can't easily rent seek off of it.
And like the go-to monetary tool for these networks is a completely centralized stablecoin.
And their own tokens. Like if you read this article, the investors got token warrants on it.
Not really.
So like it's a decentralized messaging protocol and they bolt on an XMTP token.
Never ends. I thought we were going to be past this. You were right again. Never ends.
Oh yeah. Well, right. The shitcoin. Wait till we're in the bear market, bro. These are the things I would rather not be right on. The one that I was happy that I was wrong on is that fucking Bitcoin transaction fees are cheap as fuck. So that was a good one to be wrong on. Average Gary zapped 21,000 sats, Bitcoin Veterans Summit and Range Day 2025, Bitcoin Park, Nashville, November 10th through 11th.
Ooh.
Bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. That'll be a good event.
A Range Day with some Bitcoin veterans sounds like a good way to up your skills.
I see Matt Bean in the comments saying replacement rate is every fertile couple having four kids. I thought it was 2.1. Is 2.1 a PSYOP?
Yeah, I was told it was 2.1.
Well, we would like to have, me and my lady would like to have four. I think that's a good number.
Yeah.
The more the better.
Yeah. Why not five? Let's go for five. Carlos, you gone already? Carlos is leaving already.
Bye, Carlos. You will be missed.
Thanks for coming. You mentioned low transaction fees, which presents a good opportunity to segue to Clark's dashboard. Current price of Bitcoin is 117,840 cuckbucks. Sats getting more expensive. One cuckbuck is going to give you 849 sats. We're at a $2.34 trillion market cap.
Your car now.
4.2% away from the all-time high, which was $123,060. We're currently at block height 980,000, which means we are 1,236 blocks away from the next difficulty adjustment, which is estimated to be a negative 4.4% adjustment. Blocks have been coming in at 10 minutes and 28 seconds on average. That means that we had a difficulty adjustment between last week's episode and this week's episode. It was upwards adjustment of 1.1%, currently hovering just below 900 exahash as of that last difficulty adjustment. I will say, freaks, or got to finish it out. There are currently 4,903 transactions in Clark's mempool. He's showing 2 sats per V byte to get into the next block, 1 sat per V byte to getting into medium priority blocks and low priority blocks, but mempool.space is saying you're going to need 3 sats per V-byte. I was going to mention, bear with me this week, freaks, today, I took a red eye back to the East Coast last night and did not sleep on it. So I'm going on literally no sleep. Been up for almost 30 hours now at this point.
But yeah,
we're going to push through.
I also have gotten no sleep lately, so.
Yeah.
Should be a fine one.
I can't complain in front of you. Yeah. What do we got next? All right, on to the list. Big shocking breaking news this week. There was an announcement made Tuesday afternoon that Keon Rodriguez and Bill Hill were going to plead guilty to one of the counts that the Department of Justice levied against them. They went into court yesterday morning and just did that. They pled guilty to the conspiracy to operate an unlicensed or transmitting a face up 25 years. Rodriguez has been ordered.
So they pled guilty to money transmission without a license.
That's what it was, not the conspiracy. Rodriguez has been ordered to pay a $250,000 fine, while Hill faces a fine of up to $400,000 in total. This was very, very confusing for people. $237 million will be forfeited to the government. Sentencing for Rodriguez is set for November 6th, while Hill will be sentenced on November 7th. Both are facing a maximum of 5 years in prison. With three years of supervised release, Rodriguez has been allowed to go home, but is under curfew. Hill, who currently resides in Portugal, may not leave the U.S., and his passport has been confiscated. Obviously, this is something we've been covering for over 400 days, and not going to lie, a bit shocking, but the lawyers in the space, we are not two of them, and the reporters on the ground, David Morris, Frank Corva, gave some context. I think Zach and Frank basically said, with the looming judgment in the Tornado Cash trial, which is set to be, should be today, announced today, this afternoon, I think both the Department of Justice and the Samurai team saw some risk and decided to get to the table and make a plea deal if the Tornado Cash case were to go in the direction of Tornado Cash's favor. It would make the DOJ look bad in the Samurai case. And conversely, if the DOJ wins against Tornado Cash today, puts Samurai in a weird spot. So it looks like both of them got to the table to make a deal.
So first of all, I mean, it's a very sad day. I think Keon and Bill were made an example of to scare everybody else. I think same with Roman and his colleague at Tornado Cash. We find out. So first off, not a lawyer, but I have chatted with some lawyers since yesterday. I found out the news, Marty and I found out the news along with everyone else online. My original understanding of that $237 million number was that it was civil asset forfeiture, as in Keon and Bill had, you know, a couple thousand Bitcoin that was seized, like personal stash that was seized. I talked to someone today who says he thinks that number is not relevant here, and that really it's at the end of the day, it's they're both paying about $7 million each. Still quite high, but obviously a completely different order of magnitude, and facing up to 5 years in prison for this, with the expectation that the judge will probably sentence them to close to the 5 years, if not the full 5 years max. The plea deal does not create a legal precedent, is my understanding. So it shouldn't have legal impact on the rest of the industry. Now, it obviously has emotional impact on the rest of the industry. Anyone who's thinking about building privacy-focused software or self-custody software in general, there's a real chilling effect here. It's hard for me to, you know, backseat drive this situation. I mean, they saw a very gloomy picture. And I'm sure there was other aspects that were happening behind the scenes in terms of, you know, about impact to family members and stuff like that was probably a key part here. And they wanted to protect themselves. The Tornado Cash jury should probably come back today, maybe tomorrow, with their ruling. That ruling is more impactful to the industry because it will set a precedent. I do not have high hopes for it. I assume the Samurai guys did not have high hopes for it either. So if that rule, and so they basically waited to the last possible minute to make a deal. Because if that Tornado Cash ruling comes in on the negative and they get proven guilty, or Roman gets proven guilty, that would have had a really significant negative impact on Samurai's chances. So they basically waited to the last possible minute to make that deal. I think the Clarity Act, particularly how it's currently written, is more important than ever because it specifically has protections in there for self-custody and open source developers. So hopefully we will see that pass. But once again, on that one, I'm probably only cautiously optimistic. Maybe I would put it at like a 70% chance of passing with current wording in there. Historically, the Clarity Act was mostly focused on
market structure.
Yeah, basically like helping legalize dumping shitcoins on retail. And those two aspects were added in there, fortunately. So hopefully those stay in. So all eyes on this Tornado Cash case. I will say that people that are like using this opportunity to call the Samurai developers spooks for having the feds throw the book at them is pretty out of line and out of touch, and you should consider your life's priorities.
Very low class.
That was pretty disappointing to see. But yeah, I mean, this is something that we'll keep watching. Obviously, there's still an opportunity for the Trump administration to pardon them, like they did Ross. I think there's a non-zero chance for that, but I wouldn't put it at a high chance either. And yeah, I mean, it's a sad day for freedom on the internet.
It's been a sad week. I mean, these aren't the only stories, but before we,
it's a very doomer list.
It's a very doomer list. But look, I'm pulling up the Zach Shapiro tweet, and he said you're not optimistic, but Zach tweeted out yesterday, my guess is that the longer the deliberation takes, the better. This is in the context of the Tornado Cash case. The reasons why Roman Storm isn't guilty, for example, the t-shirt being a joke and the immutable smart contract not transmitting funds are nuanced and a bit complicated. A knee-jerk reaction that money laundering equals bad isn't. So if we hear that the jury reached a verdict in the first half of the day tomorrow, that's probably bad news. Whereas a prolonged deliberation means they are wrestling with the concepts. That was yesterday. Frank Corba tweeted about an hour ago that he stepped out for lunch. He's at the trial. The jury is still deliberating, which may be a good thing, according to Zach Shapiro. So as of right now, it looks like the deliberation may be in a recess.
Yeah, I mean, the news might break while we're live. So if any of the freaks see the news break, definitely drop it in the live chat. As for the Samurai case, by the way, the sentencing, I think, is November 6th and November 7th. So we'll find out what the sentences are at that point. And then the last piece that I would say is I saw one comment that got a little bit of traction on Noster that said that the legal defense fund that was set up at p2prights.org was a honeypot. Does not make any logical sense. You could donate anonymously. Most of the donations were anonymously. And in total, it raised about $1 million. And it, projections were, if this case was going to be fought and going to appeals and try and get it all the way up to like Supreme Court status, like it was going to be in like the $10 million range. So the donations were sorely underfunded. But anything left excess over will be used for protecting other open source developers going forward. None of it will be wasted.
Yeah. I don't understand how it could be a honeypot as a legal defense fund forced to.
Doesn't lose. Make any fucking sense whatsoever, especially not one that you could donate anonymously with Bitcoin.
No. One thing I do want to note that worries me, like I really, depending on, we'll see what happens with the Tornado Cash case, but given the plea deal that Keon and Bill just took, like I do worry in regards to the Clarity Act if some individual representatives or senators decide to use that as something to point at and be like, we need to take this out. Like the DOJ, Trump's DOJ is saying that that's not good. The SDNY.
I mean, there's been conflict all over the place, right? Because FinCEN themselves came out and said that Samurai wasn't a money transmitter business. And so they pled guilty to something that FinCEN said they weren't even acting as one, because they never took custody of anyone's Bitcoin. They were simply running a coordination service that created multi-party transactions. Basically, they were just passing side messages around. But if the powers that be want to throw the book at you, powers that be will throw the book at you. Especially if you're very exposed and vulnerable with how you message things. I mean, we're even seeing on the Roman case that he basically, I guess he wore a t-shirt once that had like a washing machine on it.
Yeah.
And what it was the note on it that it said, it was like, I created a washing machine and all I got was this dumb t-shirt or something.
Yeah.
It's like clearly a joke shirt.
I think it might've said like laundering specifically, but. It was a joke. Poor taste.
I mean, the Clarity Act has an uphill battle anyway, because the Dems are really digging their feet in. And there's some concern that there might be attempts to put some kind of poison pill in it. So we'll see. It's not passed until it's passed. And as with everything else, you know, I think, and I've said this in the past, but we have to take lessons from the early cypherpunk movement, and it's all a combination and complementary to each other. Legal wins, legislative wins, and then also just better tools and education. You need all the pieces together. Maybe you don't need all the pieces together, but you find more success when you have all the pieces together. And so it's a multi-pronged approach that needs to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, I guess we'll keep you guys abreast of the Tornado Cash deliberation as it unfolds. As Matt said, it could happen at any moment. So if you freaks see anything on the interwebs about it, make sure you hit us up in the comments so we can comment on it.
And I guess they were, just to wrap it all up, like if they didn't do this plea deal, they were facing, I mean, once again, not a lawyer, my understanding is 30 years and significantly higher financial penalties.
I thought it was 60 years.
I don't know. Whatever it is. I mean, I think 5 years is a long fucking time, but 30 years is a really fucking long time, and 60 years is basically a life sentence. So,
yeah. Moving on to more depressing topics, Spotify users are being told to prove their age under a new rule in the UK specifically. And so I'm getting like full on COVID era paranoia about deep state encroachment on civil liberties. I think This is worse than anything that happened in COVID. I mean, it's on par with the COVID passports. But I guess the UK has this online Freedom Act or online
Safety Act.
Safety Act. Safety for the children.
So they're using children and porn.
It's wrapped in Save the Children.
They're using as protecting children from porn to implement KYC across the entire internet. And corporations are, big tech is effectively over complying, it seems like, which is oftentimes the case. And so I actually have multiple links here, but it's Spotify, it's Reddit, it's YouTube, it's X. And I don't think this stops at the UK. I think it's similar to how you see, like, this thing causes cancer in California and it's on everything. They're basically just setting up the groundwork to roll this out globally with or without legislation. Because also, like, we've seen VPN usage spike in the UK, and you can't, unless you KYC everyone, you don't know if you're actually serving a British citizen.
This is bad. This is, like, I thought digital ID, we talked about this when Trump got elected, like, be aware of the border. There's the immigration crisis going to be used as an excuse to launch a digital ID on American citizens as a means to prove that you're actually a citizen and are allowed to cross the border. But it seems like the UK is going first, and this Online Safety Act's been
First.
Well, Australia. It's Australia
first. No, there's like 17 US states that are implementing age verification stuff, starting with like known porn sites. But it's already spreading. They're making it broader as we speak. I mean, pull up the tweet I have after the X article, Logan. Like, so this was in Texas 2 months ago, and Abbott signed age verification for all apps in the App Store.
What?
And Elon's global affairs office, government affairs office, thanked him for it and said that's the direction they want to go in. IDs for everyone on the internet. Can you read this tweet?
Not from here. I can pull it out. I'm just thinking.
Thank you, Greb. This is from Twitter's government affairs account, X's government affairs accounts. Thank you, Greg Abbott, for signing SB 2420, device-based age verification, into law. This is a significant step forward to protecting children and strengthening online safety for Texas families. X urges other states and the federal government to follow suit. Louisiana has the opportunity to do so by supporting HB 570. Let's get it over the finish line, Louisiana! Exclamation point. So it's rather than fighting back on it, they're actually cheering it on and petitioning for it. And I would just say, just first off and foremost, that I think social media has a negative health effect on children. It's one of the biggest threats facing modern families right now. I think it has a negative health effect on adults. But also, I think at the end of the day, the responsibility should lie on parents and not on governments that are using it to control us. They're using it as an excuse to control us.
Completely agree. And the kids are just an excuse. Pull up the Cali tweet. This is exactly what's happening. The free and open internet is dying in front of our eyes, and the world is simply watching. We're building the alternative on Nostr one app at a time. Join us. We need your help. Take that call to action to heart, freaks. I know many of you already have, as is evidenced by your participation in the Zap.stream live stream. But this is the tactic. You use fear-mongering around children, terrorism, money laundering, whatever it may be. You say, we're going to put in this age verification to make sure that children aren't getting access to dangerous information and content. But really, at the end of the day, what it is a means to be able to track what everybody is doing on the internet, connect it to a personal ID, a MeetSpace ID, and then physically confront them in MeetSpace if they exhibit wrongthink on the internet. These are essentially incredible attacks. Not incredible in the good sense, but incredible in the gravity sense on freedom of speech in the digital age. Like, this is, and it's crazy how under the radar it's been. I think I wasn't. You're smirking. I see you smirking. But
I think I was like annoyingly screaming about this for a while now. Yeah. But I stopped because.
No, what? It's like.
Kids, I mean, Elon literally tweeted out. Elon literally tweeted out, authenticate all real humans, and then bought.
Agreed. I agree. And I agreed with you then. I agree with you now. But like, I think the way in which this has been thrust so rapidly, it is shocking. Like, we knew it was coming. I thought there would be more. The UK specifically, it looks like they've been leading to this for a while. But it was crazy how, like, Spotify, Twitter, like, I saw Efrat had an episode with Kevin McKernan talking about mRNA and the COVID vaccines, and they got sort of throttled because of the age verification thing. But like, the coordination that had to take place between these big tech platforms and the government to basically day one flip the switch.
Well, no, it wasn't day one. It was like, this was passed a few weeks ago. The deadline was just approaching. So we saw it happen like right as the deadline hit. I think a lot of these big tech platforms were designed for control in the first place. So it's relatively easy to implement more control when they have the desire to. But yeah, it's definitely a gradually then suddenly thing. And the other piece is, look, it's really hard to argue against these things eloquently because they immediately say you hate children and you're like a porn promoter. It's the easiest thing to gaslight about. I don't pretend that I can speak well against it. Like, it's a hard thing to speak well against because I don't think children should have access to social media. I just think it's a parent's responsibility, not the government's. And I don't think this is actually about protecting the children. But I will say,
it's funny.
Go on.
I mean, this is like the Mussolini definition of fascism too. Like the melding of big corporations and the state. Like, this is exactly what we're watching unfold here. Like, you have the other links, YouTube's new age verification is coming soon. That one's crazy. They want to
use AI. They
want to use AI to like look at your search history and like try to dictate or try to discern whether or not you're a teenager or an adult. And if they think you're younger than 18, they're going to try to verify via facial recognition software. And if you look under 18, they're going to say, nope, you can't watch this.
I think they're going to tighten the noose over time, right? Like, it's going to get worse and worse. So like, in the beginning, they'll use looser ways to screen people. Right. And we are seeing like the dystopian entry of AI, which at the bare minimum, like LLMs are just really great at sifting through data sets and surveillance. Like, that's like the early stage product market fit. There's a reason why Palantir is finding massive success among government contracts, because it's just really good at weaponizing surveillance against people. But what we're also seeing is we're seeing the widespread use of payment methods as age verification. If you have access to a credit card, you're assumed to be an adult, and also it's linked to your name and your billing address. We're seeing phone numbers being used as effective KYC and the blocking of VoIP numbers. So if you use a burner phone number, they'll just outright reject it. But if you have one that is KYC to yourself and you've used it for 5-6 years with your home address or whatever, then you'll be approved and it looks really seamless for you. But then we're going to probably start seeing the ratcheting up of this with like real time. It's already been floated. Like, the idea of real time keeping your camera on and watching your face to make sure that the person that is actually the owner of the account is the same as the one who's registered and tagged. And I think I hope people push back, but I think the majority are probably not going to. Which is, it is what it is, right? Like, I think as long as we have, you know, 5%, 10% ride or die base that has the ability to opt out, maybe that's enough to live a relatively free life. But I'm starting, you know, I don't know how much faith I have in the masses to push back against this stuff.
Do you think individuals under the age of 18 will be allowed to watch RHR moving forward?
Well, they can watch it on ZapStream.
They can.
Hey, we also have an open RSS feed. So you can always just go to rhr.tv. You can download the videos or you can download the audio without any apps, which is very important to us. Same with Citadel Dispatch and same with TFTC. That's one of the beauties of podcasting is that it is an open platform that is not company specific.
Yeah, but open the full protocol. On frontal digital ID attack is here. I always thought it was going to be like related to your driver's license or your birth certificate or something like that. But like, no, access to social media and music streaming. The fact that they put age verification on Spotify is mind boggling. Really shouldn't be, but like it is. It was abrasive to see that pop up. Like, can you please verify your age?
You know what it's like? It's like when people weren't taking the lockdown seriously and then they closed the NBA and they're like, oh fuck, the NBA is offline. Hopefully, you know, that'll scare some sense into people, but I think a lot of people will just like press the comply button.
What do you think?
Go on.
What do you think they're trying? Like, they're obviously trying to front run a curbing. Like, they want to curb conversation about certain topics. Like,
everything.
Did you see that interview of the retired colonel who went on a mercenary trip to Gaza in relief efforts? And he was on Tucker and Sagar and Crystal show today. Did you see that? I mean.
Well, why don't you fill us in?
What's the word I'm looking for? The Bitcoin veterans can help me out. Very like clean record. I think went on 13 tours, has a Purple Heart, like the most upstanding military veteran resume you could ask for. Like, he went on a mercenary trip to Gaza to give relief. I'm sure you saw the pictures of when he was there a couple weeks ago. Like, they were delivering food to Palestinians, and a little boy came up to him with some food, thanked him, kissed him on the hand, and then walked away. And then Israeli soldiers and American mercenaries shot at the crowd, and the child, who was the age of probably my oldest son, was killed right after. Thanking this mercenary Colonel Aguilar for delivering the aid. But just beyond that, like, basically came out blowing the whistle that there is objective war crimes going on just by the way they're setting everything up. And I think obviously there's been a lot of talk about Israel's land, genocide and the war crimes that are going on in Gaza now, but I think the big shocker of his sort of whistleblowing today is that you have U.S. citizens involved in this too, mercenaries.
Was that known information? What were they like employed by the? I mean, first of all, that's incredibly fucked up.
Yeah,
they were employed by the aid company or something, the aid organization.
Some nonprofit aid organization, yeah. But now, whether it's that, inflation, economy, the alien thing, it's been a weird week. That fucking
the alien thing's a psyop.
It's the biggest psyop in the world. Did you see the
video?
There's
plenty of conversation that is actually happening that they want to control. I don't think they're trying to stop us from knowing about the aliens. If anything, it's helpful if people are just speculating on aliens rather than talking about all the other shit.
Yeah. Well, it's a distraction.
I thought I saw a clip. I can't find it now. Did you see like the Trump health digital ID that he proudly announced yesterday? Was it yesterday or 2 days ago?
Yesterday.
And he was like, he proudly partnered with like Amazon, OpenAI, Palantir, like all the evil ass companies.
You're going to get a QR code with all your medical records and it's going to be easy to go to the doctor. And that's not the only thing too. Like everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people in the Bitcoin and most certainly the broader crypto community were all hot and bothered, horned up over this event on Capitol Hill yesterday. Yeah. And they snuck, I mean, it's not a law, but like the guidelines, it's like a 500-page sort of report.
Yeah, so the White House released a 500-page digital report on crypto, quote unquote, crypto and Bitcoin. And all the influencers were reporting that they used the term stacking sats and they were super excited about it. Meanwhile, which by the way, doesn't fucking matter. Meanwhile, this is what was buried in the report.
Yeah, so it was buried in the report, tailoring Section 311 authorities for digital assets. Section 311 of the USA Patriot Act authorizes the Secretary of Treasury to identify a foreign jurisdiction, foreign financial institution, class of transactions, or type of account as being a primary money laundering concern, and to require domestic financial institutions and domestic financial agencies to take one or more of five special measures. It goes on the next page. Congress should, consistent with how it has approached fentanyl and Russian illicit finance, add a sixth special measure to Section 311, authorizing FinCEN to prohibit or impose conditions upon certain transmittals of funds that are not tied to a correspondent banking relationship. This would enable Treasury to target foreign digital asset exchanges or digital asset transactions involving criminal or state actors without regard to the nature of their illicit activity. And so snuck in this crypto sort of guidelines report, the 180-day report that David Sachs, Bo Hines, and others are so proud of and they're making a big deal of, and some of our friends were at the event cheering it on yesterday in person. They snuck in an extension of the Patriot Act, which is one of the most Orwellian bullshit acts that's ever been passed in this country and should be repealed. But instead of that, they want to extend it. And I'd like to get your thoughts on it, but the language seems that like they could attack peer-to-peer Bitcoin transactions.
Yeah, that's 100%. That's 100% what it sounds like. And I could give two shits if they use the term stacking sats or not. People need to get their fucking priorities in order. But, you know, there was a meme at the beginning days of the internet. And it was like, control over the internet. How would you like it packaged? And one box was protect the children and the other box was terrorism. And so you're seeing in the same week, right? It's protect the children and terrorism. It's a tale as old as time. Because it's hard to defend against, because who doesn't want to protect children and who isn't against terrorism? And they make it seem like you're pro both of those things if you try and push back against it. And it's fucked up.
Well, it's funny because our government is filled with a bunch of people who are likely engaging in child harm, pedophilia. And it's been made clearly abundant that the intelligence apparatus, both here in the United States and across the world, is a large funder of the terrorist organizations that they're trying to protect us from. So what do they call that? Hegelian dialectic is what we're witnessing.
Hypocrisy.
Here. And hypocrisy. And I see MM in the YouTube comments. Hello, or Marty, we're going to win. Marty, we're going to win. Marty, Hopi, and Ben. You know what, MM? We are going to win. Yeah, to solve a problem, you have to identify it, you have to talk about it, you have to make people aware about it, and you have to usher them toward the tools that will ensure that they have freedom in the digital age, freedom of speech, freedom of property rights, Bitcoin, Noster, RSS, podcasting 2.0. These are the tools. We have the tools. This is why we're going to win. We're here to talk about them too.
We are the best trolls. He's a ride or die troll. He's here every week to troll us. Be like MM. Like and subscribe on favorite podcast app or YouTube. Support the show. In terms of supporting the show, we have Mav21 zapped 22,000 sats. We have Bitcoin in Space 2 zapped 21,000 sats. We have Jordan Guess zapped 25,000 sats. He says Bitcoin for Financial Service Summit is happening October 16th to 18th in Denver. It's for financial advisors, CPAs, and tax pros who want to get up to speed on Bitcoin and earn CE credits while they're at it. Check it out or send a normie advisor in your life to denver.space for tickets. And Sat Signer just zapped 21,000 sats, and he says, no KYC.
Yeah. What a week. What a week. It's a big attack. And like nobody outside of like Bitcoin bubble, Nostra bubble, like seems to
no one paying. Gives a shit even in the Bitcoin bubble, bro.
Yeah.
It's bubble. Look, this is something I went on what Bitcoin did in 2022.
Your car.
And this was something I'd like, once again, something I didn't want to be right on, but it's you numb the masses with number go up, and then you just slowly ratchet the control systems in the background. And I will say that if they were going to ratchet the control systems anyway, it's nice that at least we have number go up. Like this would still fucking suck way more if our purchasing power were going down and it was in a, you know, just Bitcoin was shitting the bed. But it really distracts people. Like the pump distracts people, and that's where the engagement is on social. So here we are, and it's going to continue. It will likely continue.
But it's important not to get discouraged.
Yeah, don't get discouraged. There's hope. I mean, I would not. A lot of people classify me as a doomer. I'm definitely not a doomer. I'm optimistic as fuck. I'm just realistic. Yeah.
Now you gotta. I feel like we need to. I remember the COVID era. I said it this week multiple times. Like, there's something about it. What's going on with the digital ID? What's going on with what was announced yesterday on Capitol Hill as it pertains to extending the Patriot Act for Bitcoin specifically? With the earthquake going, like, there's just like Mercury's in retrograde. There's a lot going on. I can feel. Like the COVID era, Marty Jones coming back and I don't say getting angry, getting passionate about making you freaks aware that it is okay to fight back. I think they didn't zap us, but I will say Average Gary zapped us earlier. So we'll see. Be peaceful, not harmless. You have tools, you have power, you have agency, you have the ability to affect the future. It just takes action. Using the right tools, educating people about this, speaking out against all this bullshit. It's very important. And people are pissed off. You see what's going on. You mentioned it earlier, like VPN usage going through the roof, particularly in the UK. People in Ireland are beginning to push back against the flood of immigrants there. Like the average Joe, the common man, is incredibly pissed off. And I think we've said this in the past, and it bears repeating. Today, we'll probably beat the drum on this a lot moving forward as this stuff escalates, but speak up. And the more you speak up, the more people you talk to about this, you instill confidence in others and more people are confident. What?
Yeah. No, I agree with everything. I co-sign this message. I would just say that one tactic that has been highly effective is you notice there's issues. You get frustrated. And then so you complain on the internet and you get the nice dopamine of the engagement, but you don't actually fucking do anything about it. And I think you should be very careful about getting stuck in that loop. And I think many people are. And to that point, we have BTC NIM in the Nostra live chat, rhr.tv/stream zapped 21,000 sats and asked if you listen to all RHR episodes, but rarely make it to a live stream. Are you a ride or die? Asking for a friend to remain nameless. Hi, Corey. Yes, you're ride or die if you take action and you take agency over your lives and practice agency, practice personal responsibility, and try and improve your life and your family's life and your neighbor's life. That's what makes you ride or die. If you're not just sitting here complacent, you're actually doing things to improve the status quo. Take responsibility. No one's going to do it for you. We have to do it ourselves.
Yeah, and on that note, sort of tangentially related, go buy Start 9 and start downloading and archiving files, because that's like you have so many parallel themes happening here, whether it's digital ID, the emergence of AI, like I've been talking to a lot of people like on the cutting edge of AI, and they're like convinced like the days of the individual sort of URL where you go to like a homepage of a website, the days of individual websites are over. You're going to interact with LLMs. They're going to give you everything.
Yeah, everything's in an agent window.
Yes. Everything's in an agent window, not an Asian window, an agent window. Might've been made by an Asian though. The dead internet theory could be coming true now. And if there's like ancient, quote unquote, ancient internet content that you would like to preserve, it's probably worthwhile to get some hard drives, a home server, and begin archiving stuff on the internet.
First of all, make torrenting great again. I don't think it ever left, but a lot of people forgot about it. I mean, torrenting was designed to easily mirror information at scale. But the second piece is I think one of the underrated benefits of Nostr, maybe the single biggest benefit of Nostr, is its ability to archive information at scale in a verifiable way with social viral elements attached to it. So if you are doing that, I mean, I really like satellite.earth, but with satellite.earth, you can upload any file type and it's automatically hashed and it's automatically signed, and then you can share it on Nostr. And that hash and signature is really important, because what that means is you know after the fact that the content hasn't been changed. Because I mean, I think that is the scary thing, is not necessarily like the libraries being burnt or, you know, the quote unquote books being burnt. It's them being changed over time quietly, and people not even realizing that that information has been altered in the first place is way more insidious than just removing the information. And that's why we need to have the ability to verifiably store and distribute this stuff.
Yeah, we had an example of that earlier this week. Let's see if I can find it. There we go. What was he? Look, I'll pull this up. Oh, wrong chat. The FBI agent who led the Clinton server in Trump Russian collusion investigations, Pete Strzok, just deleted all of his ex posts. This comes amid a slew of criminal referrals sent to the Department of Justice over the Russia hoax. Good morning. And then reply to that was Hans Monkey. These last names are tripping me up. Highlighting that the Wayback Machine scrubbed all of Strzok's tweets, probably by order. So like these tools like Wayback Machine, which many people have relied on to archive certain states of the internet over time, can even be manipulated. So something.
Yeah. I mean, they're massively centralized, and the trust model is also that we're trusting the Wayback Machine for its integrity.
Yeah.
But I will just add just there. I mean, you can also, if you're an individual, you can submit copyright orders to them to have them remove it. So it could have also been him.
Yeah, it probably was. Yeah.
I saw the tweet. The tweet said, "Who gave the order?" Like,
Can you copyright it?
Yeah.
Public platform.
You say it's your. They don't really care. You just send them like an angry form letter, and then they'll. They don't. You know, it's not a hill they want to die on, and they just fucking delete it. And presumably, he deleted his own tweets as well, right? I mean, there's no way for us to verify that, but he probably got pressured on the backside to do it and went and proceeded to delete everything, which at the end of the day, it's like, okay, maybe that's context that doesn't really matter, because who really deleted it was whoever pressured him into deleting it in the first place. But yeah. Once again, you can save tweets, right? You can take screenshots of tweets. First of all, it's hard to do. It takes time, right? As you're like manually screenshotting tweets. They'll like rate limit you if they notice like you're trying to do it as a bot. And then the second piece, it's impossible to verify a screenshot. Once again, the real insidious thing is the fake screenshots and the modified screenshots, which is incredibly easy to do. Like a toddler can fucking modify a screenshot and make it look real. Which is why we need verifiability, and people's heads can't comprehend the lack of a strict data availability guarantee on Nostr. But at the end of the day, the fact that you can easily just save a local copy of and distribute anybody's posts, any history of anything at will. And if something has value, there will be multiple people keeping copies of it. Is a complete game changer. Like in practice, it kind of relies on the Streisand effect. Like if something has value, and it's hard to objectively determine what has value and what doesn't, but if something has value to someone, if you can save it automatically in a verifiable fashion, people will save it.
Yeah. We started the episode talking about Base Sora. Noise. What's happening here? Nostr. Signal. And I think we said this last week as well, but just to reiterate, this cycle is going to be a lot of hype over there. People are going to be poo-pooing Nostr. Nobody uses it. It's just Bitcoiners talking to themselves. It's a nice pet project. It'll never scale. It's too clunky. It's too slow. Slowly but surely, over time, people build brick by brick. We're going to look up 5 years from now. And thank God people have dedicated their lives to building out that network. With everything going on. Another silver lining here. Winsome Hacks pointed it out. Unnerving. Very disappointing to see. Though, should have been expected, was expected. We've been talking about this for years. It's coming. It's here. But it's here because they're afraid. They're afraid of the common man, individual speaking out against power, trying to clamp down, which signals that they're desperate. Got him on their heels. Keep pushing. Keep speaking. My delirious rambles.
Onward.
Onward. What else happened at the president's working group? Oh, the SEC came out today and said they want to tokenize all equities on the blockchain.
Wonderful.
That's their focus.
Probably an A16Z on blockchain.
Yeah. You have a Nostr event here on the president's working group on digital assets. Do you want to pull that up or?
No, that was what we talked about, is the treasury piece.
Okay.
I think mostly positive news after this.
Yeah.
Thanks for hanging in there with us, guys.
Yeah. Positive news. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to front run the trolls here onto the 1031 section of the podcast. Fold and Blackhawk Network bring Bitcoin to major U.S. digital retail platforms. Disclaimer, Fold is a 1031 portfolio company. We're very proud to be investors in Fold, and this is a pretty big deal for them. So Blackhawk has a massive network in collaboration with Fold. They've launched a Fold Bitcoin gift card, so you can pick these up at many retail stores across the country. And I believe
right now it's digital stores only, but it's going to be retail stores.
Yes. Okay. Launched powered by Blackhawk Network, a leading branded payments provider whose global footprint spans over 400,000 plus consumer touch points, including top retailers, e-com platforms, loyalty programs, and enterprise rewards. Long story short, you're going to be able to get a Fold gift card for somebody loaded up with a predetermined amount of dollars. They'd be able to go and claim that on the Fold app. And turn it into Bitcoin.
Yeah, so this is different than the gift cards Fold offers on their app, where like you pay Bitcoin to have like a gift card to Callaway or to Nike or something. This is the opposite, right? So it's a gift card that allows you to give someone Bitcoin, or they can go and they can buy a card to then redeem for Bitcoin in the app. This is obviously not investment advice. 1031. I don't know. I fucking hate talking about securities. I like talking about Bitcoin. I think most people should are better off staying humble and stacking sats rather than buying Bitcoin stocks. But to the haters out there, 1031 has never sold a share or fold. So the accusations that we dumped fold stock on retail are just plainly untrue. And you can just check SEC filings for yourself.
Yes, you can. It's a great way to gift Bitcoin, by the way, to pick up one of
these. Look, gift cards have Lindy, right? Like, people love giving gift cards. I'm personally not a gift card guy. Like, I would rather just give someone cash or Bitcoin, but this is like a nice middle ground.
This is like, this is perfect for teachers. We're not getting the teachers Target gift cards or Starbucks gift cards anymore. You're getting them full Bitcoin gift cards. They deserve
just
better.
Give them.
They don't need another $20. They don't need another $20 Target gift card.
And it holds their hand in the onboarding process too, right?
Yeah.
Like it creates that process. So, I think it's a product that will have pretty high demand. And I know it's something that Fold has been working towards for a while.
Yeah. Next up on the list, AnchorWatch has officially completed SOC 2 Type 1 audit, which is important for many institutions that need that box checked.
This is for all you compliance bros out there. Once again, not a lawyer or a compliance guy, but I hear this is a really big deal. This is a big deal for people that want this box checked before they use something like AnchorWatch for collaborative custody. To me, the ideal target is like we see companies that are currently using custodial solutions switching to an AnchorWatch type collaborative custody with insurance on top, which is just strictly better for their shareholders. Like, this is not an ideological argument. Like, I think shareholders should demand this, and the fiduciary duty of operators of these businesses should lead them into this type of setup.
Yeah. For those who are unaware, SOC 2 compliance is literally just like, what is your procedural sort of like security practice on the back end at the company level? Are you doing it correctly? You get audited, you have good security practices and processes on the back end, you get SOC 2 compliance. So it's there. Onto something you didn't have on the list, such as
Cirilli. And it's a deal breaker for a lot of people if you don't have that.
Yeah,
because it adds career risk to them too, even if it's not a requirement. They don't want to move into something that hasn't been, the security practices haven't been audited and vouched for.
Not lawyers, but in many cases, people could claim that you're breaching your fiduciary duty if you're not acting, you're not interacting with a counterparty that is SOC 2 compliant. All right, that was enough compliance talk. Or compliance is defiance. AnchorWatch is leading the way.
Happy paper Bitcoin summer.
On to cooler things on Bitcoin and the layers above it. You didn't have this on the list, but I think it's pretty cool, worth talking about. Simplicity has been merged into the Liquid network. Simplicity, for those who are unaware, has been long talked about. It's been talked about for, feels like a decade now at this point, quite literally. literally a decade in the making.
I think Blockstream doesn't have anything on their roadmap that doesn't take over a decade. I think that's like a requirement they have.
So for those of you who are unaware, Simplicity is like a more robust scripting language. You can do pretty complex smart contracts. Again, this is on the Liquid network, not on Bitcoin at the protocol level, but many people, I've talked to Adam Back about it. I'll actually be recording with Andrew Polstra tomorrow to go over what this means, what you can do with it.
My best interview of all time. Hopefully you got more words in than me.
One question. I had him at Bitcoin Plus. He let me get a lot of words in on the live desk at Bitcoin Plus.
To the freaks that don't get the reference, it's on the Sill dispatch feed. It was a couple of years ago, but it was at Bitcoin Park Nashville. It was the commons at that point. And I was interviewing Andrew in front of a live audience, and I asked him, so why don't you explain to us your journey into open source? And then he proceeded to answer for a half an hour, and then the interview was over. And it was a really good answer.
He's easy to talk to. He's engaging. Like, he'll think deeply about a question and answer it earnestly. Like, he's great interview.
Yeah, I mean, like, it actually was one of my best interviews of all time. It was very insightful. It's just I didn't have to do anything, which was actually made it even better.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the original, like the original, well, one of the original value props of Liquid was that it was similar enough to Bitcoin that we could test out a bunch of complicated things on. And simplicity is one of them. And the hope is to then use it on Bitcoin after we see it in action on Liquid.
I think it's a big lift to get into Bitcoin proper, though, from what I understand.
Yeah. Once again, it wouldn't be on the Blockstream roadmap if it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they had to launch Elements first. Now you got Simplicity. But it's cool. You know who's going to experiment with this first? You'd probably do something cool with it.
Who?
Who would you think? No, I want you to guess.
Rob Hamilton?
No. Maybe. Could be him. I think Francis is going to, I could see Francis trying to do something with this.
I mean, he's Liquid heavy too.
Yeah.
They just released a Liquid wallet. Bull Bitcoin was way ahead on Liquid.
I could see it. I wouldn't be surprised if Bull Bitcoin was first to launch something using Simplicity. But this is important stuff. Bitcoin scaling technology. Matt historically has poo-pooed on Liquid. I've been more sort of amenable to the potential.
Shit on Liquid. I ask when there will be actual users of Liquid. There's just not many users of Liquid.
Hey, maybe Simplicity is what they needed, dude.
I will say that you can tell we're starting to see actual usage of Liquid because people are arguing about whether or not it's self-custody right now. A lot of back and forth.
And why is there isn't it like pretty clear? They're pretty clear at the trade-offs.
There's a lot of wallets that are claiming to be self-custody Lightning wallets, but they use Liquid on the back end. And Liquid is effectively multi-sig custody is how you should think about it. It's a federation.
And large.
Yeah. So it's definitely not self-custody. I wouldn't call it straight custodial either. It sits somewhere in between. And we've talked about this in the past. We talked about this with Spark. The providers of these things are never going to say they're custodial. So you guys can argue all you want, but they know their tweets can be used in the court of law. So they're just never going to say that. And you're wasting your time arguing against a wall. But if your goal is to try and educate users on the trade-offs, then that's valid. And that should probably be your goal, not trying to convince the person on the other side of the argument. And of course, the argument is that you're self-custodying Liquid BTC, which is not Bitcoin. But I mean, like it's turtles all the way down. Like you could make the argument that Cashew is actually self-custody. You're just self-custodying the IOUs. You're not self-custodying Bitcoin, which is in practical terms, not really a strong argument, but maybe in legal terms, it could be.
Legal terms don't seem to be in our favor these days, so be careful out
there. The user is self-custodying the IOU.
The file, the token, the file. Yeah. eCash token is a file that they hold on their device, they possess. Yeah.
I would just say that if you go down the turtles, like Tron is not self-custody either, because Justin Sun can just fucking change things at will, but he gets away with it. So we've seen examples of this in crypto land. There's no such thing as cold storage for a shitcoin because they can just rug you at the protocol level.
I just got a flash flood warning and I got to drive after this, but should be fun. Should be fun.
Well, at least the flash flood will cool down the area, so you shouldn't need to use your AC.
I can't run windows down though, or can I? Luckily, I have a Tahoe. Great for flash flood conditions. If you're going to have a car, you want a Tahoe. Chevy, think about sponsoring the pod. added one more thing to the list before we get to the Human Rights Foundation section of the
week. Marty gets rugged by a company and then asks them to sponsor the show. It's just
it's the least you can do.
It's the type of financial panic that sets in when you're having another kid. Just got to get those sponsorship dollars.
Shocked you didn't have it. This is pretty cool to see this week. Logan, pull it up. Epic Bitcoin researcher, yeoman in the space, B10C, published a blog post explaining that he's been working on a project for a couple of years now and feels comfortable coming out of it. He's calling it Peer Observer, which is a tool and infrastructure for monitoring the Bitcoin P2P network for attacks and anomalies, and a call to action to create what he is calling, I want to be specific with the language here, because he was a Bitcoin Network Operations Collective. Long story short, B10C has been launching nodes with beefed up sort of analytic capabilities. He's calling them honeypot nodes, and not an attempt. We don't know for sure, but he's positioning. I'm pretty sure he's not trying to be nefarious here. He's white hatting the P2P layer of Bitcoin. So these nodes are basically looking for other nodes connecting to his nodes that are acting in nefarious ways, either by trying to flood the node with data to crash it. And he's basically saying that there are people on the network that are, there are nodes on the network that are acting nefariously by either tracking other nodes or trying to flood them. And on top of that, finding anomalies as well, I believe. He was able to find a bug as well. But the point being, I think the most important point that he makes in his blog posts is the fact that Bitcoin is a $2.34 trillion market, and we are dependent on individuals like B10C. And I think he said there's a few others that are doing work like this with him to basically make sure the P2P layer of Bitcoin is secure and robust against attacks. It is crazy to think Bitcoin is bigger than Google. I think it's bigger than Meta, Amazon now. And they probably have, I would argue, it's orders of magnitude more important than those centralized third parties and those companies. And yet we're dependent on yeoman like B10C and the others helping him to do this very important sort of protocol level security work. So I want to draw attention to this because I know many of you protocol devs that like the P2P network listen to this. Something to pay attention to. OpenSats, something to pay attention to.
We fund.
Yeah, you fund it. You guys fund it. Yes.
I mean, he deserves all the credit, but we support him. I think this type of thing is definitely happening, and it's good to be able to measure it and track it.
Yeah.
It's 100% happening now.
Yeah. And it's crazy that, like, if B10C wasn't there to do this, like, it's crazy to think. It's the beauty of Bitcoin, too. It's crazy, but it's also beautiful.
There's like,
B10C and just doing the work.
There's like 50 to 100 people that are doing the work that are just going to be very hard to replace if they get burnt out and walk away.
Yeah. I'm trying to read Gary's comment here. I don't know what he's trying to get at. MM, I still see you in there, trucking buddy.
He's just talking about what we were already talking about. You can just ignore it.
Yeah.
Have to remember that as people are watching YouTube, if they comment while they're watching in the past, it still comes up to us now. So like sometimes they're commenting on old things.
That makes sense. Guys, give us a retweet on X. We need to beat. We're going to beat TBPN one day. We've got 3.8K live viewers on X, which is great. I think that's above average.
I kind of fucked us on X by taking half the Rider Dies with me to Noster. But if you're still on X, not only press the retweet for us, but go to x.com/CaliBTC and press retweet on all of his posts.
Yes.
He needs all the support he can get over there.
Yeah. another yeoman in the space, a mensch. On to the Human Rights Foundation story of the week, which is coming from El Salvador. New insights reveal Bitcoin deception. A new detail buried in an IMF progress report cast doubt on El Salvador's claim that it is buying one Bitcoin a day. According to the IMF, increases in Bitcoin holdings and the Strategic Reserve Fund reflect the consolidation of Bitcoin across various government-owned wallets. This suggests that President Nayib Bukele's progressively authoritarian government may be reshuffling existing Bitcoin holdings from undisclosed wallets rather than accumulating new Bitcoin. A letter signed by two of El Salvador's top finance officials also confirmed the state has not bought Bitcoin since February 2025. The revelation comes after El Salvador secured a $1.4 billion IMF loan, which required the government to scale back key parts of its Bitcoin policy, including ending tax payments in Bitcoin, phasing out the Chivo wallet, and making private sector acceptance voluntary. While Bukele continues to tout Bitcoin as part of El Salvador's identity, the disconnect between official actions and public messaging calls into question transparency and credibility. For more stories like this, go to financialfreedomreport.org. Sign up for the newsletter. Comes out once a week. Yeah. I think we should be leaning more into the IMF and not Bukele, you know?
I agree. I think this is more of a be aware story. They are clearly pretending that they're still buying Bitcoin. The faces of the operation and the forward messaging implies, if not just outright says, that they're buying Bitcoin. They have a mempool.space homepage that it shows it going up and to the right and them constantly buying Bitcoin. If they are shuffling Bitcoin from other wallets in a deliberate, slow fashion to make it seem like that's the case, I think that's something that people should be aware of. But I don't know if we know this for a fact either. I will say that this story specifically said two finance people in El Salvador said that was the case, but yeah, I don't know who those people are, and I don't pretend to understand El Salvador politics either. So, and not an El Salvador politics expert.
Yeah, neither am I. I will say, like, I was very, very, I was bummed when they took the IMF loan. I was like, you're going into Bitcoin. We need to fade the IMF. The IMF, like, if you need to take an IMF loan, it's like a poison pill for your country. Argentina learned this the hard way. But we don't have to belabor this. Be aware. Be aware, freaks. Next up, BitChat version 1.2.0 iOS and BitChat Android version 0.8.1 have been released. I've been downloading it. I've been opening it.
How many times did you download it, Marty?
I downloaded it once. I've been opening it, like looking for BitChat peers. I haven't found one yet.
So if you have it running in the background, it will give you a notification if a peer comes into contact. So you don't have to keep opening it. I had a great conversation. So Dorsey vibe coded this thing in a weekend. It got a ton of excitement and just organic, viral hype and excitement. And people
we had our most viral tweet ever about the BitChat announcement at TFTC.
There you go. And all the engagement accounts loved it. Like, they could have just retweeted Jack's tweet, but instead they took a screenshot and wrote it out themselves just to try and harvest those nice blue check ad dollars. But then Callie saw the tweet. Callie and Jack are friends, but supposedly Callie didn't have heads up about it. So Callie finds the tweet, and within a day and a half, 2 days, he vibe codes a native Android version of the same protocol that's compatible with it, which is absolutely remarkable. Like, that is one of the single best examples of the power of these vibe coding tools and LLMs, is that historically, like, people have used these shittier methods to make cross-platform apps rather than building native apps that are highly performant and more efficient because they want to have iOS and Android support. But in this case, you had a native iOS app And then you had, that was vibe coded. And then you had a native Android app that was vibe coded, that was cross compatible with each other. And now that there's a lot of excitement, they are shipping improvements to it. I just had Callie on Scylla Dispatch. We had a fantastic conversation about BitChat and where Cashew comes in. But just for a high level, like basically the idea is not a new idea, but it's this idea of mesh nets, this idea of instead of using centralized internet infrastructure or cell infrastructure, messages are bouncing between phones. The range is short right now because they're using Bluetooth. So it's 30 meters, 100 feet for the Americans in the room. But if you have someone within 100 feet of you and then they have someone within 100 feet of you,
that was 300 meters.
No, it's 30 meters. It can bounce between. Now, they're thinking about adding Wi-Fi Direct, which would increase that range, but it uses more battery life. And they want to add internet bridges that use Noster. And so this update adds the first internet bridge, which is basically the idea that if you connect to someone in mesh and then you leave the mesh and you're far away from each other, but you both have internet, it will continue the conversation via Noster, so that BitChat itself doesn't have to run servers. They can just piggyback off the existing Noster relays. But anyway, it was a really fun rip. It was one of the better rips that I've had in recent times. Usually is with Callie. So definitely consider searching Scylla Dispatch in your favorite podcast app to give that conversation a listen.
Go listen to it. Callie's the man. Matt's pretty cool too, I'm sure. I haven't listened to it yet. I will listen to it in the car ride, the car dealership.
The nice thing about the Cali rips is it's like a little bit less extreme version of Polstra, where I just let him go. Like I get in like two words and then he just goes for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And then I get in two words. And then he goes, and I mean, he just has such a fascinating perspective, and I'm just very grateful we have him building on Bitcoin, Noster, Cashew, now BitChat. And they're all just very complimentary. And I would just say that I have a book recommendation for y'all, which I've mentioned in the past, which is Daemon by Suarez, which came out in 2006 and has massive like BitChat, Cashew, Bitcoin, Noster vibes. And it's crazy because it's one of my favorite reads. And I think it was like very formative in how I think about things. But I read it before I discovered Bitcoin, obviously way before Noster existed or BitChat or Cashew. And I need to give it a reread myself, actually. But if you haven't read it, you should consider reading it. It's a fun, insightful read. And then he came out with Freedom, which is the sequel afterwards, which you should also read. All the Suarez books are good. And I will say, just in 2006, like there was digital money involved, but he called it credits. And the like, as I kept reading his new books that were coming out, I was like, when is he going to discover Bitcoin? When is he going to discover Bitcoin? And then his latest book is like Web3 and NFTs and all this shit. And I'm just like, please just go back to credits. Just call them credits. You don't have to, you don't have to bring in the crypto bullshit. But besides that, he's one of the better authors. You know, I think he does a good job with like thought experiments on near future type of things.
All right. Just so I don't get shit. It's just, I just bought it on my Kindle. I got it, and I'm going to read it.
On his daylight computer.
Kindle app on daylight.
There you go.
It'll be my beach read for the week.
This one you're going to read.
Yeah.
Okay. This one is more important to read than Mandibles.
Okay. I do love reading on this thing. It is like, I've switched this out. Update from last week. Doom scrolling is switched to like, I pick up this thing and read.
Very good. That's the way.
Yeah. And one thing, pull up the Primal or the Noster note via Primal. Vitter building on the BitChat sort of conversation that we're having. It was cool to see. Vitter wrote, at some point I will integrate Cali's Android BitChat code into Amethyst. We were already playing with P2P Noster DMs 2 years ago. BitChat just shortcutted its time to market. So to your point, Matt, like these combined interoperable protocols.
Look, I mean, this is how the internet should be, right? Like yeah. You should be able to have, you know, local communities that have robust direct infrastructure with each other, but rather than rely on these large centralized, you know, networks that are easy to control and easy to shut down and not as robust. And then ideally, then you have, you know, if you have like one member of the community that has an internet connection, whether that's, you know, a regular fiber line or Starlink or cell or something, then you could then bridge them out to the global community. That's how it always should have been. And partially because the powers that be have made it more difficult for that kind, these kind of networks to exist. And they've nerfed a lot of consumer radio applications. But also it's just, it's a hard adoption problem to solve, because there is a big adoption hurdle at the beginning, because a mesh is not useful if other people aren't using a mesh. But I think it's pretty cool, their local first concept here. And there's a lot of talk about using it at conferences, using it at sports events. I think like using it at farmers markets is a really cool concept.
Yeah.
Especially when you add payments into it.
I mean, you've talked about it in the past. When you go to big shows, you'll go on Silent Link and get a SIM card of like a totally different mobile carrier, because it actually gets you service. Like if you had,
yeah. So Silent Link, yeah. Silent Link by default, I use their data only SIM. By default in settings, you can switch carriers at will at any point. So I usually use whatever the cheapest carrier in my area is. But then when you go to these like high density people things, the cell networks tend to get overloaded. And one of the cool parts about Silent Link is then you could switch on the fly and see if any of them aren't overloaded. But yeah, for this, I mean, and the other cool thing is, what if you only want to send a message that is to the 80,000 people at the game, right? Like, are you going to post that on X or post that on Noster? Like, that doesn't make any sense. You're sending it out to the whole world. Like, it's dope that you can just have like a localized group chat where you can post things without relying on centralized infrastructure. So, I mean, I think sports events specifically are quite interesting here, because first of all, you see payments. There's payments all over the place at sports events. Cell networks are issue. And second of all, it's crazy that we have fit 80,000 people into a tiny ass area, right? Like a modern football stadium. They're massive.
I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I get overwhelmed. Firefly Festival, 2013, rain out. Saturday night of the festival, Kid Cudi was the headliner back in the day. Rain out, storm came, evacuated 80,000 people like cattle herded back to their camp. I got very, very
music anxious. Festivals are a great use case for this too. And I will say that the most memorable music festivals are the ones with the rain outs. It's like everyone's. You can go to 100 music festivals. The one you remember most vividly is the one where you just everything gets soaked through.
Yeah.
Just complete chaos.
We had a fun time back at the camp after we got through the cattle herding, but I have to go because I have to get to the dealer before the service center closes. This was great.
Well,
it was a little depressing, but we're like ending on Freedom Tech, okay?
Well, let me
you're going to end on paper Bitcoin. Why are you going to end on paper Bitcoin? Who cares?
Because it's a paper Bitcoin summer, Marty. And this is what the freaks were waiting for. Your YouTube thumbnail has his face. How can we not talk about it? First of all, we forgot to mention that Powell didn't cut rates. He kept rates straight or flat. And our clickbait is Powell's face and Saylor's face. I just want to highlight real quick that this should actually be a very interesting earnings call, because it's the first quarter that MSTR is able to report their Bitcoin gains as earnings. And all the suit analysts, I don't know if they realize that yet, because all their projections have them losing like negative 12 cents per share. But really the math is $35 per share earnings, which is like the most insane disconnect.
35?
Yeah, they're off by $35. Usually when there's like an earnings beat, it's like off by like $5. And the crazy thing is like usually you're kind of like projecting on earnings.
Off by like 5 cents.
If there's a big earnings beat, you know. And then like the other thing is like we know when he bought Bitcoin and how much Bitcoin he bought. So like anyone can calculate that number. So is it priced in? Is it not priced in? Like no one really knows. It could be an all big nothing, but it still seems like an interesting paper Bitcoin summer highlight. That I wanted to, because it's literally going to happen in 2 hours, I believe. Yeah. Like two hours.
Hey, markets are still open. You can get your paper Bitcoin before.
No, not investment advice. Not investment advice. Stable sex apps could be priced in. I'm not saying that, but yeah, I see Satoshi witnesses just to counteract his saying he's going to dump on the news. I just think it's a timely piece of Bitcoin history.
Yeah, social.
We'll see. Yeah.
Social event, or what would we call this? I forget, but I don't know. I had some people ping it. There's a lot of hardcore Bitcoiners out there. They're not happy with paper Bitcoin summer. Nobody's calling out these treasury plays. We talked about
it.
I want to reiterate, we're UTXO maximalist here. Yeah. Stamble, stack sats, get UTXOs, use the tools, spend Bitcoin. We're talking about all this interoperable communications, money, e-cash protocols. Like that's what we like to do here.
I agree with that. And everyone should stay on the stack sats and self-custody Bitcoin, cold storage Bitcoin's a fucking superpower and remains the alpha in the room. Like that is the contrarian take. And that's like where the most success will be. Like you cannot compare anything to self-custody Bitcoin. That being said, like you have to separate MSTR from the other Bitcoin treasury companies. There's MSTR and there's everything else. Like it's you can't group grouping the two together is strictly retarded. They're on completely different levels. MSTR has a massive bag, a massive head start, and the preferred shares are super fascinating. Like they're like creating this moat of their yield curve situation over there with the preferred offerings that I think most people are sleeping on. But yeah, you should stay on Bloom Stack Sats.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Yeah. There's MSTR and there's everybody else at this point. Let's see. Maybe there's some competitors going to rise. We'll see. Get after you listen to the Cali, I think you could fit in if you start it right now. I think it was like 2 hours and 15 minutes, if I recall correctly.
What? Cali episode was an hour 50.
Hour 50. Perfect. That's what we're going to end here very soon. You go, you take a bathroom break, you eat a snack, you give your wife a kiss on the forehead, you pat your kids on the head, and you say, Daddy's got to lock himself in a room for 3 hours. I got Matt and Callie, Citadel Dispatch, straight into the MSTR earnings call. It's a perfect Yeah.
I love it. And specifically, if you're listening to this on YouTube, if you still use YouTube, if you could subscribe to the Citadel Dispatch YouTube channel, like I'm so heavily shadow banned over there. Like maybe we can just push myself out of the shadow ban. I would appreciate it.
Do it right now. Logan, link to Citadel Dispatch in the comments, please. Or we're actually going to wrap up. I don't know if he's going to get in time. Logan.
Yeah, don't put it in the comments. It's just youtube.com/@Citadel Dispatch, or you can search Citadel Dispatch on YouTube or your favorite podcast.
All right. We're going to give you enough time. Potty break, snack, make sure you're hydrated. Callie, Matt, Dispatch into the earnings call. It's going to be a beautiful Thursday afternoon for all of you freaks.
Love you all. Stay humble, stack subs.
Peace and love. We're going to win. MM, that's for you.